What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're here talking about your battling Toronto Blue Jays being dragged over the finish line by Bo Bichette and other Blue Jays who are not Bo Bichette. Exciting time to be a Blue Jays fan. Exciting time to read The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe. Get everything you need to know now. Long weekend. Labor Day weekend. Shout out to all the minor leaguers signing those union cards. One episode this week. It's me, your host, Drew Fairservice, and my co-host, former Blue Jays All-Star, joins me from beautiful downtown Los Angeles, sort of, Ricky Romero. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. We'll just call it by the beach.
By the beach.
By the beach. It's burning here in California, man. Southern California, usually beach area, you have a little bit of a breeze every single day. I have never slept with like our sliding, because we don't have AC, because again, the ocean breeze, you get all that good stuff. We sleep with both sliding doors open, windows or curtains completely open. It's crazy how hot it is.
Is it a heat dome? Is that what they're calling it? Like a heat dome that's just sort of sitting? Because that's what happened in like Vancouver last year, was the heat just sat.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's been crazy. We're getting a crazy heat wave, and this weekend was insane. When I'm telling you, it was insane. Like, it was too hot to be anywhere. We had our fantasy football draft, and everyone's like, hey, dude, do you have any fans here? And I'm like, no, like, I live by the beach. I've never had to use this type of stuff. And yeah, man, but other than that, everything's great. Football season this week. Blue Jays are playing great baseball. As you mentioned, the Bo Jays are playing great baseball. And it's been fun, man. I mean, they needed to get on this kind of roll. And definitely a big game today. Winning the series against the Baltimore Orioles would be huge, and taking 3 out of 4 from them. They got the perfect guy on the mound. So I'm excited for this show. There's lots to dig into, and little scuffle last night. I wouldn't even call it a scuffle, just a little back and forth. But all that stuff I think is good. I mean, this is crunch time, Drew. And I feel like the tensions are going to be a little bit higher, and everyone wants to win. So, hey, I'm all for it.
It is definitely September baseball. It looks and feels like September baseball. Maybe not in Southern California, but as the seasons are slowly beginning to change here in Southern Ontario and in Maryland, where it was rainy but like not too hot, things are heating up on the field. This, we'll talk a little bit about this series with Baltimore. We'll look ahead, talk about some of the controversy that came out of Tuesday night's game, which of course saw a lot of things to talk about. Let's start with the doubleheader, actually. You can't overstate how important sweeping that doubleheader is when it comes to this four-game series. It just set them up so well. Number one, the worst thing you can do now is split. You know, the pressure's on Baltimore. They're the team that's chasing you as well. So while they got the win on Tuesday, if the Blue Jays win here on Wednesday, that's huge for the series. Like you said, they've got Alek Manoah going. The offense is looking better, you know, thanks in no small part to Bo Bichette, as we talked about. But I don't know. What do you think? Just the ability to take both those games in that doubleheader on Monday just seems to me so, so huge for this series and the season series and the entire idea of the Orioles chasing in behind the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and I'll backtrack a little bit, Drew. It kind of got started by this weekend. They go into Pittsburgh and they needed to take care of business there. They sweep the series, but it started with Alek Manoah on Friday night, him going 7 1/3. And I think the key was the next day when they had that bullpen day, and it kind of, you know, everything kind of fell into place for them. And it was like, okay, boom, they got bullpen day. They got a big W. Stripling goes 6 innings. And then it kind of allowed them to have, obviously, Gausman, Berrios, and a fresh bullpen ready to roll into that doubleheader. And when you get 6 2/3 from Gausman and you get 6+ from Berrios, huge. I mean, we've been saying this all along. It's going to be all up to the starting pitching. And this team's going to go as far as their starting pitching takes them. These are the key guys. Yes, it's good to have an offense. It's good to have, you know, 6-7 runs on the board. But if they're not pitching, it don't mean anything. And it almost just like when Manoah did what he did in Pittsburgh, and it kind of just, you know, the next guy took the ball and did the same thing, and then it just kind of went down the line. And when you have your two horses and Gausman and Berrios going out there and doing their thing, I mean, it's huge. You can't explain how big that is. And to take two in Baltimore, a team that's kind of had a lot of success against the Jays this season too, but they did their thing and everything kind of fell into place. And I think during that stretch prior to last night, in 5 games they give up 11 runs And I mean, that's a little over two runs a game. So your chances of winning are going to be really, really high when you do that type of stuff. And again, you gotta tip your hat off to the starting staff, to the bullpen. And obviously that fifth starter still remains a big question. I don't know what you do there. I'm sure we'll dig into that. But yeah, aside from last night, I mean, the starters are doing their thing.
The starting pitching is the real difference maker for this and any team. Right, lots of teams can score. The Blue Jays offense hasn't been like blowing the doors off people in the way we kind of maybe expected them to do. You know, when you look at a lot of the numbers as far as the team has gone, they are not too different from last year relative to the league average. But this Blue Jays team is so strange. You know, they've been on these crazy stretches, right, where they win 7 of 8, you know, in New York and Baltimore and Boston, then they get swept by the Angels, then they win 7 of 8 basically again. You know, even then, that's just going through Chicago, going through Pittsburgh, and then taking those first two in that series against Baltimore. But just one good trip through the rotation after another. And it doesn't mean that everyone's coming out there throwing 8 shutout innings. It's not the way the game is anymore. But six good innings, you know, 6 2/3 good innings, you know, managing the game, keeping the runs off the board. You know, Jose Berríos, his first time through the order when on his start, he was getting hit hard. He was getting hit hard, but then he sorted it out. And that's, to me, that's the difference, right? And that's why I, in the last week or whenever I'm asked, it's like, yeah, absolutely. You trust Jose Berríos going into a playoff series. Yeah, absolutely. Jose Berríos is going to be, you know, when he has a bad start, the questions start to come and people get a little worried. But it's like, that's the difference, right? The difference between what we saw from like a guy like Mitch White, who the wheels kind of came off and it's hard to put them back on. But Berríos can kind of work his way through. You know, his stuff is so good. As soon as he is able to kind of find that fastball, get his mechanics, that little tiny tweak, and then he's off of the races, right? And he's pitching well. And he's, the next thing you know, you look up, it's bottom of 5. You're like, oh, wow, he got hit pretty hard that first time through the order. But now it's like he's through 5, he's given up 2, right? And like that's the mark of a to me, a good pitcher, a guy who's not at his best. But I think that's what we've seen with all the Blue Jays too. And it makes me think of where I want to go next, which is Bo Bichette, right? Bo Bichette struggled all year long. But even though he was struggling, he was still an above average hitter. You know, you could see as plain as day that he's not what you expect. He's not what he expects. He's not what he's capable of doing, right? But at his worst, he was like, what, his OPS plus or his weighted run created plus was 102, 103. Maybe dips down to 98 for a couple of days and it's back up just over the league average. And then all it takes is one crazy streak like this, one ballpark that is just like one ballpark and pitching staff that's really suited to his swing. And then the balls are going out to right field and that sets him up. Then he's able to pull one, right? And then he hits that bomb to center field. Like, just a great hitter. It's who he is. And it's easy to poo-poo him, I think, a little bit when you see his approach and you see him down 0-2 and you see him taking wild hacks in the first pitch. But it's like he can do a ton of damage. And that's what makes him such a valuable player. He plays every single day. When he's bad, he's not even that bad. And when he's good, he's as good as it gets, right? So really, really easy to root for and be so impressed with what we see from Bo Bichette right now.
Yeah, and you said it best. He plays every single day. And I know this guy, I think we touched on it a little bit last week, receives a lot of criticism, but he goes out there and he's grinding every single day. You see emotion out of him. Lately, you've seen a little bit more emotion out of him. And he's a winner, man. He's a guy that wants to win. I've had talks with Guillermo Martinez, and he's like, Bo Bichette is a damn winner. And that talk about a guy who's in that cage trying to figure it out every single day, working hard. That's stuff that we don't see. We sit out here sometimes and we want to criticize a guy. Oh, like, what is he doing? Why is he swinging at that? And it's like, as we've said it before, right, Drew? I mean, from the couch, we can hit every pitch. We can throw any pitch. We can hit any pitch. We can catch any line drive at us or whatever. But again, the guy, it's the man in the arena, and Bo has stuck to his plan, and he continues to say it in his interviews. I am a confident man. I know what I need to do, and I'm confident in my abilities, and I'm sure he stuck to his plan. And I'm sure at the end, when he was laying his head on that pillow, he's like, all right, I know if I trust my process and I trust my plan, everything's going to work itself out. And what better time for it to work out than right now? I mean, the guy is hitting everything. And I think the biggest thing that you see out of him is the way he's taking pitches. Like, you see it now and you're just like, okay, he is locked in. And as a former pitcher myself, when a guy's doing that to you, you know that you're like, okay, like, I'm really, really going to have to make sure I don't make a mistake to this guy, because you can tell when they're seeing it well, their feet are moving, they're kind of like going with the pitch, they're seeing that changeup down, they're seeing that curveball down, and they're not flinching. And usually when a hitter's struggling, he's flinching at certain pitches and stuff like that. But when you see a guy locked in like that, you're like, okay, I got to make a pitch and just hope that he gets himself out. And that's the type of thing that Bo's got going on right now. He's just seeing the ball well. Anything that's pitch, you're just, as a pitcher, you got to tip your hat off to it. You're like, wow, how did he hit that? Okay, well, he's locked in. I believe not his last hit last night, because last hit he got jammed and it fell. But the one where he went to right field, the double where he went to right field, I mean, he was beat on that pitch almost. And he just kind of kept the barrel through the zone and boom, he pokes it into the right, down the right field line. And next thing you know, it's a double. And it's like, wow, this guy is on another level right now. And again, it couldn't have come at a better time. And good for him. Good for him, because like I said, he's faced a lot of criticism, but I think he's the one smiling and having that last laugh right now.
He is showing, you know, who he is, right? Like, this is the guy he can be. And that's why they play 162 games. And it's that added pressure of playing every day. Like I said, I mean, his numbers are now where we'd expect them to be at the end of the season, and because we're getting close to the end of the season. And sometimes it takes that time. A hot start, a slow start, it's not a reflection necessarily of a guy's talent, of the work that gets put in. There was a kind of school of thought that there are no like hot streaks, right? I mean, hot streak, there are so many moving parts, right? In a guy's swing, in his mentality, in his approach, in his, the way that his body is going to respond to this kind of stuff. So that when all those things can kind of line up, and then that's when you can see someone as talented as Bo. That floor is high and that ceiling is really high. And he's really kind of putting on an amazing display in that, in a ballpark that he loves hitting in. He absolutely destroys Camden Yards. I was looking at it. He's got like an 1100 OPS in that park over his career. He's got 8 home runs. He's got 67 home runs. He's hit, I think, 11 of them maybe now in at Camden Yards. Huge. You know, that right field fence just like made for him just to take shots at it going the other way.
Well, if he ever became a free agent, we know where he's signing. I'm just kidding.
They'll back up the truck. He's got an 1182 OPS. He's got 9 home runs in his career at Camden Yards, 5 triples, and then just all those other 5 doubles and all those other extra base hits.
And also the biggest thing is he's not striking out right now, which is crazy, because he's a guy, like you said, sometimes when you're watching a game and the first swing he takes, you're just like, whoa, like what was he looking for there? And it's just the Bo way. It's what he does. And again, a guy that's seeing it well right now and not striking out just tells you where he is mentally and physically and how he's seeing the ball. And you can't say it enough about it couldn't happen at a better time with a team that was, you know, obviously coming off a tough homestand with the Angels and then the Cubs. I mean, they did their thing, but he's picking it up at the right time. This is a confident team. And I believe George Springer said, I don't even think we're playing our best baseball yet. And it's crazy to think that the ceiling is that high for this team, because it is. We've all been waiting for it and we've seen flashes of it throughout the season, but it just hasn't been consistent.
That production has come from different spots in the lineup, but we still haven't seen it where even the top 5 guys, you know, it's easy. Someone like me, I bellyache sometimes about the depth guys. You know, the bottom of the order sometimes is, can get a little ugly when you've got guys like poor Ramel Tapia, who's just really going through it right now. Jackie Bradley Jr., who has good game, you know, here and there, but still is a guy who's on the downside of his career. Danny Jansen, who had a bit of a rough go until he kind of saved the day, whatever that was last week. But I don't think we've even seen the top 4 hitters in the Blue Jays lineup kind of all going at the same time. Because if you can get that, right, that's when it just becomes really scary. Like right now, we're not seeing a ton from Vlad, right? He looked like he hit that ball hard to center field last night, but just not, maybe got it off the end of the bat a little bit, hitting a lot of ground balls. You know, Matt Chapman is that same guy who has that same approach. His approach, we've talked about it so much, about staying in the big part of the field, where how many times we've seen him hit fly balls with the warning track or fly balls right in front of the fence, but it's to the deepest part of the park, where if he got frustrated, he could have been like, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to start yanking stuff down the line. But that's not when he's at his best. So, you know, maintaining that strong focus, understanding who you are, what makes you successful, it's big. And the Blue Jays, maybe they are still a disappointment relative to what we thought or some folks thought or expected them to be, but like, they're right there. And if they can go and win another game against Baltimore, that would really put some significant breathing room between those two teams and give the Blue Jays one last thing to think about. Speaking of things to think about, what do we think about this dust-up? Brian Baker, Teoscar Hernandez, who's been swinging the bat well of late as well. But so crazy that, not crazy, just odd. And the Blue Jays players' comments coming out about Brian Baker kind of eyeballing the dugout and really like kind of taking the fact that he wasn't able to crack the lineup personally.
Did you see the Arash Madani tweet?
No, which one?
It says, the best chirp I heard about Brian Baker in the Blue Jays clubhouse tonight. And remember, he was in the organization from 2018 to 2021 and promoted to the big league team last season. The best thing that guy ever did was win a March Madness pool.
Yikes. Yikes.
Low blow, man. But hey, what do I think of it? I agree with what Vladdy said. I'm all for emotion, show emotion, but when you start looking into our dugout, it's personal. And you start, you know, signaling at our dugout, then it becomes a problem. And that part I didn't like. And the Jays have every right to react the way they did. I don't know about Mateo holding Vladdy and Teoscar all at once, because if you want to go get someone, you go get someone. You don't let one guy hold two of the bigger guys on the team. But you know what? And even Teo was a little bit confused by it too. He was like, in his interview, he was like, I don't even know what that was all about, because I'm not the type of guy to even, I mean, he's like the quietest guy ever. And for him to be ticked off the way he was, obviously they had an issue with it. And again, I'm all for emotion. You want to pimp a home run, go ahead. You want to pimp a strikeout, go ahead. But the moment that you look into the dugout and you start signaling and you start saying, come on, but then you back away too after your whole team is in front of you, it's like, don't do that, dude. What's the point of that? But again, Drew, it's one of those things where tensions are high. Two teams battling, you know, one's chasing the other. And I'm a little worried for today's game, because we know how Alek Manoah likes to pitch. We know he likes pitching inside. We know that sometimes he hits guys, that one of those guys is going to take it personal.
He does lead the American League in hit batters.
The umpiring crew is a little suspect, that it would stink if they issued warnings right before the game and then something happens along the lines where Manoah maybe hits somebody and they think it's intentional, and then next thing you know, he's kicked out. I'm just thinking ahead. I'm just thinking, you know, different thoughts about what can happen. But again, it's one of those things where the tensions are going to be running high today. Again, and you saw the shot of Manoah at the end of the game where he sat in the dugout and he looked at them celebrating after their win, and he's just kind of nodding his head like, okay, like, here we go. Hey, that's a motherfucker you want on that mound, man. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That's the guy you want. Like, that's the guy that's getting ready for battle. That's the guy that's saying, all right, give me the ball. I'm ready for this. It's awesome when you have a guy like that, a guy that is not scared of the moment. And he knows it's a big game. He knows it can shift the other way towards them. 3 out of 4 sounds better than going 2-2 against them. And they have the right guy on the mound. But again, I'm just a little worried that the umpiring crew might try and take matters into their own hands. Obviously, John Schneider got thrown out yesterday. Jeff Nelson seems to be the talk of this series, with Gausman, when he called that balk on Gausman, which is so awkward, odd, and just weird that he wouldn't even give him a warning. Usually an umpire gives you a warning at first, or they'll come up to you. I've had umpires come up to me and say, hey, man, can you just make sure you stop a little, all right? Or I'm going to call it. Cool. No biggie. But the fact that he just came and did that to Gausman, and Gausman was fired up. And I feel like all the Jays have this thing against Jeff Nelson right now. And they should, man. I mean, hey, you're screwing these guys over sometimes, and or a lot of the times. And again, it's going to be a fun game today. And I'm looking forward to Manoah on the bump. And just these tensions, if they continue to get high, even better, man. It's playoff baseball for sure.
The Jeff Nelson thing is really interesting. Yeah, but let me just backtrack real quick. Think about the incident. There was a good shot of Teoscar kind of after he hit into that double player, grounded out, and Baker looks like he said something to him, and Teoscar would like had a bit of a smile on his face. Like, that's weird, because Teoscar took him deep the day before, and then he decides he needs to chirp at him again. But and the thing with Jeff Nelson, with that, the word that they used, the Blue Jays were using, was premeditated. Like, he came in being like, I'm going to call a balk. He balks. Well, I think we saw that, and the same thing with the play at the plate and that review call, where like the integrity of the game is sort of secondary to like this really semantic rule following kind of flex. the play at the plate, the thing with Kirk, how he was standing in the lane for a brief second before he moved out of the way. That rule was put in place to protect the players, to not have them making these crazy collisions, not having them running into each other, sliding through each other. That call, as interpreted in that way, because it is so ambiguous, I just think it's crazy. And then the same thing with Jeff Nelson's decision to go and call that balk without a warning, without a conversation. Are you protecting the integrity of the game? What's the reason for a balk? Why do you call a balk? Because you're trying to deceive the runner, right? That's the genesis of that rule. You can't try to trick the runner into thinking you're doing one thing when you're doing something else. Obviously, there's still an element of deception in the game, but like, who is being served by that? Is he in that moment was trying to deceive the runner by doing things exactly the same as he always has, as he did the very next pitch? It's not deceiving anybody. So what are you protecting? What is it that you're running around like over power mad mall cop? It's so stupid. It just doesn't serve the game. Let the players play. Protect the players. Put rules in place that are going to keep the guys from getting injured. And it's not the Buster Posey rule. I always forget the actual guy that like precipitated this, the rule change, but it's not the Buster Posey rule, but it's to protect the game's players. Keep the best players in the field. Let them play the game. It's not Dungeons and Dragons. It's not Stratomatic. We're not just rolling the dice and saying like, this guy's got this much talent, so we can expect him to get a hit this amount of time. He's still got to play. And those two things coming back to back, it just to me is so frustrating. I honest to God, the score didn't help. I turned it off after that rule change that ruling last night. I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I don't need to sit here like with this. It was frustrating because it's just like I play men's league and I wouldn't want somebody to come in and try to run me over. We're playing men's league. We all go to work the next day. These stakes are different in the big leagues, but at the same time, that idea is still the same. Protect each other. Have that respect of your colleagues, of the players in the other field or on the other side of the field. But like, there, no one is being protected by that. There's no safety was not a concern. It's just so stupid. And then that Jeff Nelson just inserting himself into the story, inserting himself into the game, repeatedly issuing these things. That if they issue warnings before the game, that would be crazy to me because nothing happened yesterday. Nobody got thrown at. No, the bench is cleared in an unrelated incident. They issued the warnings. It diffused the situation. Like, let it be what it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
It was stupid because they even issued a warning on Felix Bautista when he came in. I saw the umpire come up to him, and I was like, why? Why? Like what are we doing? Like, it was nothing that had to do with guys being thrown at. It was just something that happened between the lines. Two guys, one guy being fired up and chirping at the dugout, and the dugout reacting the way they did. But why is it automatically have to be like, warning, you can't hit anybody? And it's like, what if they weren't going to hit anybody? Like, if you don't give out a warning and somebody gets hit, hey, then you probably give out a warning. But this whole, like, you're right. Like, the game of baseball, sometimes it's trying to get too cute with all these rules and stuff like that. That you said it. I mean, you turn off the TV because you're so damn mad. The score was what it was, and they were probably going to lose the game regardless. But stuff like that frustrates you for the future of this game. And you sit here and wonder, what do we teach catchers nowadays? How do you even teach them? Like, are you supposed to just, if the ball's thrown you, like, if it's being thrown offline, like, do you just let it go? Because, hey, if I go and try and get it, I have the risk of maybe blocking the plate, which is what happened yesterday. Like, he's obviously taking him where the throw's going. He even gives him a lane. And then next thing you know, he comes back, tags him, and somehow that still wasn't good enough. And it's like, what do we teach our catchers? How do we teach them the right way? Like, do we just, as a third base coach, so you sit there and say, all right, everyone just go, because we run the risk of maybe the catcher blocking the lane, and next thing you know, it's a run for us.
A frustrating thing for me, and it's not his fault, but was immediately, like, the players are looking for it. They're looking to exploit this.
Yes.
When Rutschman slides in, and he jumps up and he starts pointing. Because he knew what he saw. He was like, when I was halfway between third and home, he was standing in the way. He got out of the way to the point where one thing I saw a lot of people say was like, they thought that Rutschman was safe. Because I think Kirk went so far out of his way to not block the plate, to not be in the way, that he could have let him slide back in safely. That wasn't what the replays were focused on, so I didn't get a better look. But like play the game with integrity, play the game to win, protect yourself, protect your fellow competitor. But like, this is just so, it was just so sad. And you're never going to hear me say something like it's soft or like we're, you know, this coddled. I don't think it's that at all. Play smart, but play the game to win. Like, it's a physical game. There's going to be contact. If you're doing your job in good faith as a catcher to be like, I'm just trying to field the ball and I'm going to tag this guy up before he gets to the plate. You know, I'm not going to lay down and lay my body in front of there and put myself or him in a position to be injured, but I can do my job into the, where a guy like Kirk is almost overcorrecting and still gets it wrong. Like, they still, quote unquote, gets it wrong. It's really unfortunate. And one thing I do want to say was, you talk about the umpire coming up to him. I think that the fact that Manny Gonzalez was on the field yesterday was like, I don't know, when he came over to clarify with Felix Bautista, you know, just probably, you know, Gonzalez being Spanish probably helps Bautista when Nelson comes out and just kind of said, there were warnings. And then just to make sure that everybody knew, it's nice to have, right? It's nice to have a guy who can speak the language. So many players in the league speak as well. Not to say that Manny Gonzalez is a good, bad, or indifferent umpire. I don't know. But one of those things, when you know an umpire's name, it's usually because he's fucked up and he's pissed you off. So one thing also, now looking ahead, we can get past this.
Hey, but believe it or not, Jeff Nelson's scorecard came out. He was 88%. He was plus 1.54 runs for the Toronto Blue Jays.
You know, Jeff Nelson's not all bad. You know, he's a complex guy. But you mentioned Felix Bautista, who is so nasty. God, just absolute filth. Just such a huge dude coming way right over the top and throwing that nasty splitter. But he went multiple innings last night. And not only did he go multiple innings, Dylan Tate went multiple, went an inning and two thirds. Sionel Perez went an inning and a third. Right, facing, you know, Tate throws 30 pitches, Perez throws 17, Baker throws 17, Bautista throws 25. Maybe think at least a couple of those guys are probably down for Wednesday's game, which could kind of swing the advantage back to the Blue Jays a little bit. I saw that, what's his name, coming off the Tyler Webb, coming off the injured list, going to start for Baltimore today. But like you said, the Blue Jays have the guy they want out there more than anything, Alek Manoah, who's pitched so well. You mentioned that series. We haven't talked a lot about that series in Pittsburgh. Man, that is a bad team. That Pirates team is like truly, truly dreadful. And the American League is such this year that with the Blue Jays, you know, facing these American League East teams as often as they do, facing and Baltimore being so improved, you don't get to see a lot of as many bad teams in the American League. And so, you know, the Tigers are pretty bad. The Royals are very, very young. But like, man, when you see that Pittsburgh team is like really, really bad. I truly feel for those fans in Pittsburgh because, man, that's a bad team. And the Blue Jays took care of business, right? They went in and I think that was a really great gamble that they made on Saturday, being like, we're going to do a bullpen game today. We're facing this truly awful team with a really, really, you know, not a good offense. Let's gamble a little bit. Let's take a risk. Have a bullpen day today. And then line up our starters for the doubleheader. It really, really worked out, and you want to give credit to Brian or John Schneider. I'm sure that there were others within the organization that made, you know, helped and kind of fueled those choices. But I think that's a really worthwhile and really smart series of moves that the Blue Jays made to set themselves up to win this big series.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, we touched on it earlier, like Manoah, and I thought it was pretty cool, man, that he had his whole West Virginia team there. Obviously, he was at the West Virginia-Pittsburgh game the night before, and West Virginia football team lost a heartbreaker. The fact that his alma mater came to watch him throw, and he delivered another excellent performance, and you see the emotion of him coming off out of the game and him kind of saluting them. I thought all that stuff was pretty cool. I mean, anytime you're able to make an impact, West Virginia obviously is a good baseball school, but it's not like it's like a powerhouse where you're talking about it like the Texas of the world. So anytime you get a guy that's doing what he's doing in the big leagues and is able to make an impact on a program can obviously help boost the program that much more. So I thought that was pretty cool. And you said it, I mean, Pittsburgh is a bad team, but those are the teams that you're supposed to beat, and good on them for sweeping them, man. Cause I was like, even if they drop one, like they just can't, they can't drop one. Pittsburgh at times made it hard on Sunday, but, you know, they overcame that. And Jordan Romano, I mean, my goodness, Drew, I mean, he's been amazing. He's just been on another level of dominant. You got to tip your hat off to him, too, and him being able to go multiple innings and stuff like that lately. A guy that they're going to rely on a lot, you know, come late September into October and all that stuff. So it almost seems like it's coming all together for them. And we talked about it last week too. We said it, like, it seems like these guys are starting to realize what their roles are, and they're mentally preparing for those roles. Obviously, we knew Romano was the closer, but the guys in front of him are the ones that I feel like know where they're, when they're going to pitch, when their name's going to be called upon. John Schneider's done a great job, so you got to give it up to him for that. To me, this is just my observation as a fan, and when I watch the game on TV, I love how much communication goes on between him and Pete Walker. It just seems like they're always talking. They're always trying to think ahead, because sometimes you do have to think ahead as a manager, as a pitching coach. You have to say, okay, if Berrios goes out for the seven and he gets in trouble, who do we have coming up? Who should we get up? And it always seems like they're just talking. And that, to me, is the biggest key to anything, is having communication between manager and pitching coach and having a great relationship. And it just seems like they have that really, really well. And they've you just see it on TV a lot.
Alec Manoah, also, the one thing that you and I talked about a bit was, like, it would be nice to see him have a bit of a easier outing, right? Have a little bit of, like, a go in and not grinding, not battling, not having these high stress innings. And the Pittsburgh Pirates are good for what ails you, because he was in there and he did exactly that. He definitely felt like he was cruising that much more and really dominant. I don't think I realized that West Virginia, Morgantown, it's like 75 miles from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
That's great. And also, the other thing was awesome. So you heard me on the last time you and I talked, I was like, if you got time, go down. Oh boy, did Blue Jays fans ever show up in Pittsburgh? There were thousands.
Yeah, I saw
thousands of them. It was crazy. I had so many people, on Instagram and stuff, and wherever else, like, down in Pittsburgh, taking pictures at the game, getting great photos, having a great time. It's a good place to go and see a game. So, I mean, that the Blue Jays are definitely back in that mode now, with, you know, being what they were whenever the Blue Jays are a really, you know, super competitive team. I mean, no matter what, Blue Jays fans travel well, but when the team is good and the mood is good around the team, people show up in those border towns, in Detroit, even in Baltimore. You know, yesterday and during some of the rain delays, there was the Let's Go Blue Jays chant was loud throughout Camden Yards. A good time to be a Blue Jays fan. The Blue Jays look ahead. They are headed after tonight, Wednesday's game against the Orioles, a big one. They're in against Texas. So Texas, maybe not quite as bad as some of the other teams that the Blue Jays played in this softer part of the schedule, that they've done exactly what they needed to do. You know, the Rangers are not exactly a pushover, but that's a team that is 15 games below 500, 17 games below 500. That's a team the Blue Jays need to go in and take that series.
They do, and they can't let their guard down against Texas, because they can hit. And they have some guys that can hit. So yeah, I mean, it's another important series. I mean, they're in playoff mode, Drew. They're in playoff mode. They've been in playoff mode. They have to stay in playoff mode. Every game is a playoff game for them, and they can't say, okay, like, we're gonna take it easy, or not that they do, but, you know, I feel like John Schneider said it best. This is after they got swept, I believe. It's like, you gotta commit to winning for 3.5 hours. You got to come out and commit to winning, and if you do that, we're going to be on the right side of things. And right now, they seem to be on the right side of things. And if they drop one, okay, cool. You just can't let it snowball into 1, 2, 3 in a row, and then next thing you know, you're back where we were after that Angel series, where everyone was panicking and everyone's wondering, like, man, can the Jays not make the playoffs? But right now, they seem to be on the right track. The Bo Jays are doing great work, and, you know, they got Texas and then Tampa again, Baltimore. So it's a lot of the same teams here to close up the season. It's going to be a fun ride going into late September. So I'm looking forward to it.
It is going to be a fun ride. It's going to be fun for the Blue Jays to catch up with former Blue Jay Marcus Semien, of course, Corey Seager, lots of really good, you know, there's some pretty good players in that Tigers dugout, even though, or the Rangers dugout, even though they're not great. But there's, you know, like you said, you just described it from the Pirates series. You don't expect them to sweep. You can't say go in and sweep, but then they did it. And you know, I don't think you expect the Blue Jays to go in and sweep. The Rangers are not quite that bad, but this is a series, like all of them at this stage in playoff mode. You got to win. Got to win the series. Got to find a way. Got to find a way to get a better performance out of Mitch White. Got to find a way to make it all work. But it's exciting time to be a Blue Jays fan, and you got something to say.
Yeah, I got one thing for you, Drew. If you're managing this team, what do you do going forward with this fifth spot? You can't keep giving games away. You just can't. You're gonna need some consistency out of that fifth spot, at least till the season ends. Because when the playoffs start, then you can just maybe rely on 3-4 starters, right? And they have those four guys. But out of that fifth spot, you can't keep going down 4-0, 5-0, or, for example, last night you're up 3-0, and then you just cough up the lead right away, and it just seemed like it snowballed on Mitch White. So what do you do there as a manager? I mean, where is the depth to this team? Who, give me the best AAA starter. Who is it? Casey Lawrence? If that's the case, then hey, maybe it's time. Let's go. Let's see if you can give me five innings. That's it. I feel like that's what we've been looking for out of that fifth spot. Just give me five. Six would be amazing, but just give me five at this point.
I think this is, you know, the Mitch White situation is the kind of thing where you start looking for ways that you can manage it and maybe use a starter or an opener, I should say, right? Like, what can we do to give him that the best chance to get through? You know, he's a guy that first time through the order, his numbers are good. Second time through the order, his numbers are much worse. Third time through the order, his numbers are awful. So you're not going to, you know, I'm not going to let Mitch White see a team three times. I might just say, go get me through twice. Get me through twice and let's see if we can let's use Trevor Richards, you know, who's been using more and more high leverage situations. But like, what can you give me, Trevor Richards? Or someone, can you give me two innings out to start the game? And then we put White in. Yeah. You know, if you can get White to start off at the bottom of the order, get through the top of the order once and then see where you are. Is that asking a lot? Maybe. You know, is that going to be tougher to do in this not as expanded roster kind of era? Potentially, it's worth taking a shot because you don't have any options. Casey Lawrence he's not a better option to me. Like, it's great that he's able to get outs in the minor leagues and stuff, but I would much rather stick with a guy like Mitch White, who's shown that he can get big leaguers out, just not enough at a time right now. But I think that I'm looking to see who I can slide in there. You know, we've seen some really good stuff from Yusei Kikuchi and some really like perfectly selected opportunities. He's striking out like 40% of the batters that he's faced since coming going into the bullpen. So maybe you say, let's get somebody, if it's Richards or David Phelps, get me through one. If everything goes perfectly, maybe get me two. Then I can bring in Mitch White, and then I can bring Yusei Kikuchi and hope that it's an opportunity for me to score some more runs.
Fair enough. Yeah.
No, it's a legitimate concern. His numbers are awful, right? His numbers are really bad recently. But that for me, I'm not willing to go because the roster, you don't have any roster spots, right? You know, Casey Lawrence is kind of holding Nate Pearson's roster spot on the 40-man roster in a way right now as well, as the Blue Jays wait with bated breath to see what he can do. You know, you got Julian Merriweather who's been added to the roster. So I think you're a little bit stuck. I'd like to see them be a little bit more hopeful. I mean, his next start is what? Is his next start going to come? Well, he's going to miss the Rangers, I guess. So you got him starting against Tampa. So do to Tampa what they've been doing to you for years and years and years. Throw the opener out there. Yep. Get it done. So it's something to monitor for sure, and it is a question that they're I'm sure battling with and grappling with. For me, that's probably how I do it next time out. Give him another shot. See if you can put him in a better position to succeed. And then you got to make a decision for the real crunch time after that.
Fair enough.
Enjoy the games. Enjoy that weird cast iron grill that they call a ballpark there in Texas. And then more big games. Games against the Rays. Games against the Orioles. Yet to come. His name is Ricky Romero. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will see you, and you'll hear from us very soon on the next edition of Spin Rate.